This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our joint retirement laws. We're going to do a two-session. We're going to have just a kind of a review on the joint is going to cover the agenda today. Just for reference, because the House will be doing this someplace down the road, and then we're going to go into a Senate, and then we will address the four bills that we're going to be talking today. But at this point, I'm going to call the joint retirement laws into session. I'd ask everyone to take a seat and have your phones turned to silent. If you're testifying today, we ask you to sign in the back. And I don't know if there's any handouts. I don't think so. But if there is, we have pages available. At this time, I'd ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Nisba.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Wismer excused. Boland.
Here.
White.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. At this time, I see we have two pages. Would you come forth and introduce yourself and from your, where you're from and a little bit maybe where you're going to college?
As soon as they
Go ahead.
My name is Jonathan Burkhalter. I'm from Prairie City. I'm a junior, and I'm undecided right now.
All right, thank you.
My name is Jordan Kitzmiller. I'm from Sturgis. I go to Sturgis Brown High School. I'm a junior, and I want to do something with youth ministry after high school.
Well, welcome, and thank you for joining us and being a part of our legislative session this year. Okay, we have an intern also that would, if the interns would like to introduce themselves, please.
I'm Jacob Miller from Sioux City. I go to University of South Dakota. I'm a political science and economics major, and I want to go to law school after undergraduate. So,
welcome and thank you.
I'm Sydney Swenson. I'm a senior at South Dakota State University, major in global studies, political science, and Spanish. I'm at Senator Nesba's intern this year. Excited to be here.
Thank you, and also welcome. Thank you for your service. This time we'll do a roll call then on the House.
Representative Duba.
Here.
McCleary.
Here.
Perry excused. Rounds.
Here.
Zickman.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, on the informational agenda, we're going to have Travis Allman, the Executive Director of our South Dakota Retirement System. And as he's coming forth, a special welcome to our 90,000 plus members of our retirement system. If you're joining us today, hopefully you get a chance to hear how our retirement system is doing. As you know, it's one of the invaluable retirement systems in our United States. So, Travis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Travis Allman, Executive Director for the South Dakota Retirement System. Mr. Chair, if it'd be all right with you, I would maybe ask the board members that we have in attendance to come up to the microphone and introduce themselves.
We'd appreciate that. Okay. Thank you.
Matt Clark, State Investment Officer.
Lori Gustafson, I represent state employees in the South Dakota Retirement System.
Hi, Louise Loban from Volga, and I represent the Board of Regents employees.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. I would also like to introduce the staff that we have here with us today. We've got Jackie Storm, our Deputy Director and General Counsel, Doug Fiddler, our Senior Internal Actuary, and Jane Beer, our Chief Finance Officer. Before I get started, I just wanted to reference a document that we handed out prior to this presentation. It's the annual report of the funded status of the South Dakota Retirement System. Both Doug and I will be working from this document. Doug will probably reference it more than I will during his part of the presentation, but I do want to just reference that before we get started. Basically, with the annual report, we prepare this each year and provide that to the governor as well as you as legislators, and it just gives you an opportunity to get a summary of the funded status of the system as well as what we've experienced over the course of the last year at the system as well. So again, we'll be walking through that. I'm going to keep this very brief. I know we have a time schedule to stick with, so I'll probably even stick a little bit to the script that I put together rather than diving deep into different things. So I'll keep it as brief as I can. What I thought I would do is start with just the key takeaways from this particular report, maybe give you guys some statistics on SDRS, and then just conclude with what the board's up to and what they're going to concentrate on moving forward. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with the takeaways from the report. First of all, SDRS exists to provide adequate and equitable lifetime retirement benefits to our public employees in the state of South Dakota. That is our vision. That is our goal for our public employees. The next takeaway that I would point out is the fact that SDRS is sustainably managed within the resources of provided by fixed, shared, employer and employee contributions. And when you look at those contributions, they're much lower than what you're seeing across the nation. Matter of fact, Doug will talk briefly on that, but the national trend is that those employer contributions continue to rise to fund these public pension plans. And this approach is not typical among plans, it's accomplished through variable benefits, primarily the cost of living adjustment. As you all may remember, we made changes to that cost of living adjustment, and it really provides us with the opportunity to be fully funded in most economic conditions. We also have a second piece of that, and that's the statutory funding thresholds that we have that set boundaries for acceptable measures and require corrective actions if those particular measures are not met. That's Statute 312C 228, and Doug will also talk about this briefly. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out the fact that when we look at SDRS's funding, if I didn't look at the Investment Council and thank them for the great work that they've done, their superior long-term performance has just been second to nobody. And quite frankly, we wouldn't be in the position that we're in today if it wasn't for the great work that they do at that office. SDRS remains 100% funded as of the end of the fiscal year 2019. That marks the 24th time in the last 29 valuations that SDRS has been 100% funded or greater. And that's just a rare accomplishment and something to be extremely proud of. The July 2020 SDRS cost of living adjustment will equal inflation for the prior year. So that July 1st, 2020 COLA will be 1.56%. And lastly, as a lot of you know, and I just referenced it earlier, we're continuing to see that trend where contributions, in particular on the employer side, are continuing to rise for a number of public pension plans, as is that with balance sheet debt. And I guess what I would say in summary to that is the state of South Dakota and our nearly 500 participating employer units remain unburdened by those increased contributions and that balance sheet debt that those other states are seeing. Again, with the contributions, that's been our commitment to you is to live within those fixed resources and manage this plan. And that's really goes back to our South Dakota retirement system perspective. That's our discipline that we follow, and that's a big part of the discipline is the fixed contributions and the variable benefits. We believe that's a model plan and a way to run a public pension plan. Over the last several years, the board has recommended and actually brought several different initiatives to you as legislators. And it's really in an effort to help us manage these challenging times that we face. We know that there's going to be difficult markets ahead. There are low expected returns and volatile markets. And we brought a number of different pieces of legislation to you that would include the COLA that I just referenced before. It's really expanding the variable benefits that we offer at SDRS. We also had a new structure. It's the generational design that I'll give some statistics on here shortly, but we offered a new design, the generational design, that was effective July 1st of 2017. And then lastly, we've addressed our actuarial assumptions, really adopting actuarial assumptions that are most realistic in our view. Some of those assumptions that we've addressed are the investment return assumptions, mortality, wage growth, as well as inflation, just to name a few. You know, I guess at this point we can say these changes are working, and we're meeting the goals that the board has set as far as our benefit and funding goals are concerned. But that doesn't mean that we just put that on the shelf and forget about it. We're going to have to continue to analyze and quantify risks. Doug does a wonderful job of educating the board on those risks and really those probabilities of good times versus bad times. And I know that he's going to talk a little bit about that with you here shortly. And the board's going to continue to plan for sustainability. Again, that's a big part of what we do in our office. I've always been very proud of the fact, and I've been with the system for almost 20 years, and the fact that we've always been proactive rather than reactive, I think, is a pretty amazing approach. The board takes their fiduciary responsibilities seriously, and that's the approach that they want to take. And we do some exercises with the board as far as planning for those good times and those bad times, and I think it better prepares us for when those challenges hit us in the face. Just to give you guys some statistics regarding SDRS, as we referenced earlier, at the end of the fiscal year 2019, our membership was only almost 90,000 members, and of that, we had 41,500 active members and 29,000 benefit recipients. Our benefit recipients, when I say benefit recipients, it's not just our retirees, it's also those folks that would be receiving a disability benefit, or maybe those families that are receiving either a family benefit or a surviving spouse benefit. Our average age of our active membership is age 45 years of age, with 10 years accredited service and an average salary of $47,000 per year. Almost 20% of our active membership, that 41,500, almost 20% of those folks are our generational members now. Again, that was effective July 1st of 2017. Hard to believe that we're almost 3 years into the generational design. Matter of fact, in fiscal year 2021, we could potentially see our first retirement from the generational design. May not happen, but it could potentially occur. We would expect that half of that group, that active membership, to be generational by 2027. Currently, we are paying $588 million a year in benefits. We would expect to hit the $600 million a year mark, which I shake my head as well, Senator White. It's just kind of amazing when you think about it, and the fact that we're still as well-funded as we are and sustainable as well. If you would reference the annual report, I would maybe make reference to the very last page of the report, page 22. It basically just provides you with the benefits that are payable by county. And I thought this might be interesting for all of you just to see the impact of SDRS for the counties that you represent. It also gives you a little flavor as far as the benefits that are payable in South Dakota versus those benefits that are paid outside of the state as well. So I just wanted to reference that page so you could use that in the future. The average age at retirement right now is 64.1 years of age, and the average service for those folks is 19.3 years of service. We continue to see that average retirement age continue to drive north, and I think there's a couple of reasons why. I think one of them is the volatility in the markets, and when we see that volatility in the markets, we often see people that have less confidence in the economy, and so they may forego their retirement to a future date. The other one, though, is obviously the insurance premiums. That is the single biggest factor of people delaying that date of retirement, and I would expect to see that to continue to drive north. Most of our members are delaying that retirement to age 65 when they're Medicare eligible now, is what we're seeing in our office. The average annual benefit for our benefit recipients is a little over $21,000 a year, and the average age for those folks is age 72. I'd like to close with just giving you guys a little bit of an idea of what the board's going to continue to concentrate on. The first part of it would be our long-term planning. Again, this goes back to our sustainability efforts, the proactive approach that we take. It's something that we take very serious, and I know the board's going to continue to do that moving forward. Effective and transparent member and stakeholder communications and education. That's a big part of what we do. We spend a lot of windshield time in the year going out to visit our members and educate them on their retirement planning. We do that via individual consultations, workshops, seminars, and we also get a number of our employers that ask us to come to their place of business to educate their staff right there. And it's not just important to educate our members on retirement planning, but I think it's important important to also educate those folks on the overall health of the system and our sustainability efforts as well. And we extend that to our stakeholders as well. It's important for you guys. Hopefully we've done a very good job in the past of educating you on the system, and we'll continue to do that moving forward. If there's absolutely anything that you would need from any of us, I would encourage all of you to reach out to us. We're more than happy to help you. Again, I hope it helps you in your jobs. I know it definitely helps us in our jobs. The promotion of additional savings, that's really a second part of our vision. That's a big part of what we do as well. And you might remember that we've had two different years that we've offered legislation on the automatic enrollment in the supplemental retirement plan. The most recent was effective July 1st of 2019, and I thought I would just share some statistics of how that went. And basically what auto enrollment 2.0 did is what we called it. But what auto enrollment 2.0 did is it basically enrolled all of those state employees. There was 2,777 state employees that weren't already participating in the supplemental retirement plan. So it automatically enrolled those folks into the SRP. As of September 30th, 2019, and I haven't seen any recent numbers lately, I wouldn't expect them to change much, if at all, but we had 2,530 of those that were continuing to contribute into that supplemental retirement plan. So that's 91% of that group. It's just a real positive outcome. It's actually very consistent with what we've seen with our initial auto enrollment that was effective back in, I believe it was 2009. Very consistent with those numbers. So it's very positive to know that once you lead those folks to making that decision, you educate them and you get them started, they continue on with that good decision. So that left 247 folks, or 9%, that decided to opt out. The typical reason that we saw for the opt-out was really kind of age-based is what we saw. Those folks that maybe were a little closer to retirement decided that maybe they weren't going to get as much value in investing into the SRP at that point and decided to opt out. We also had some individuals that expressed that they were participating in some other type of plan outside of SDRS, which I guess for us, the bottom line is you're saving for retirement because those additional savings are important. We really want them to participate in the SRP, but we just want to encourage people to save in general. One last statistic on that. Of the 2,530 members, 2% of those are 52, not only continue contributing to the plan, but also increase those contributions. We would have liked to have seen that number a little bit higher, but again, the silver lining is the fact that 91% are continuing to contribute to the supplemental retirement plan. And then I guess I would close with the fact that, again, we're going to continue to manage SDRS within our fixed resources. That's been our commitment to you really since the beginning of SDRS, and we're going to continue to make that commitment. We'll continue working with the board in preparation for our sustainability efforts when we are challenged in those difficult times, and that's really what I have for preliminary comments. I'd be certainly happy to answer any questions, or I could turn it over to Doug. I know he's going to dive a little bit deeper with some of the graphics, and that may answer some of your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Allman, for your remarks and stunning performance, I might say, because it continues to just amaze us when you say $600 million is being paid out. And I'm just wondering if that's even feasible. But anyhow, thank you for your presentation. We'll look forward to you hearing on the bills.
Okay.
Next, you know, as I in my prior world, I was in the banking profession, and there was someone that always sat right next to the CEO of that bank, and that was a risk management individual that tried to keep us out of trouble and on the right path. And so at the our next presenter is that person for our South Dakota retirement system. Doug Fiedler, you continue to just be a part of our positive ways, and we appreciate that and look forward to your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to be here. Doug Fiedler, I'm senior actuary with the retirement system. I am as well going to be working from the report that Travis was starting through, and you might hear some echoes of what he was saying and what I'm doing, because we try and hold to some key principles and keep going back to those in our decisions. The second key takeaway that he mentioned, those are the inside of the front cover of your report, was that we operate within the resources provided by those fixed member and employer contributions. That's not the way that most public retirement plans work. Most of them have a fixed benefit, and then they adjust the contributions, mostly the employer contributions, sometimes the employee as well, to keep the system in balance. So this is really a unique approach, and this goes back to 1973 and 74 when they were putting the underpinnings of the system together. This was some of the decisions that were made, or a big part of the decisions being made, that set us on the right path. To accomplish managing the plan to keep this balance with fixed contributions, there's a couple of features, and Travis mentioned these as well. The variable benefits and our out-of-bounds markers in 312C228. The variable benefits are mainly the COLA. And how the COLA works in general is we have the COLA is equal to inflation between 0.5% and 3.5%. But when we cannot afford on a sustainable basis, when we can't be 100% funded on paying that whole COLA range, we restrict the top end of that COLA range to the level that we can pay on an ongoing basis. We can maintain 100% funding, which means we're on track to fund these benefits when they come due. Last year, we were able to pay between 0.5% and 2.03, and inflation was at the top end. This year, because the investment results were slightly behind our long-term assumption, we can afford to pay 0.5% to 1.88. Inflation for the year, and we use the same measure as Social Security, came in at 1.56%. So the COLA payable next July to our members will increase their benefits by 1.56%. Which accomplishes the board's goal for that COLA, which is to avoid the benefits losing purchasing power due to inflation. The other part of the structure that allows us, I should also mention the variable retirement account is part of the generational structure, and that's a small piece of the benefit. It's value about 12% of the benefit, and it's an account-based feature that its value varies with the investment return of the trust. So that's another way we're trying to stabilize the funded ratio to manage that part of the liability in conjunction with the assets available to pay for them. The other piece is the out-of-bounds markers in 312C228 that say if we do our COLA adjustments and that variable retirement account adjusts and we can't maintain 100% funded even with that full adjustment, we're going to bring legislation back to the Retirement Loss Committee to recommend corrective actions to fix that situation, because that would mean on an ongoing basis we cannot afford the benefits and we have to make adjustments as well. If I could take you to page 5, there's a couple of charts on page 5 that show how this has worked out. This different methodology has worked out as opposed to the one that's generally used in most public sector plans. The chart at the top of page 5 has contribution rates, and the SDRS contribution rates are in blue. And for our general members, if member and employer contributions are 6% each, and they have not changed. I think they changed in 2002 on a prospective basis, but they haven't changed since that time. And that's our commitment, is to manage the system on those contributions. The red dotted line is for the median large public sector plan. So we're looking at general employee plans. We're looking at those that are participating in Social Security, because plans that don't participate in Social Security generally have higher contributions and higher benefits to make up for that. Their member contributions used to be about 5%, the median, and that has drifted up to 6. But I think the key point here is the employer contributions, which is the solid red line. And back in 2003, they weren't that much different than ours. They were about 6.5, and that has more than doubled over the last 15 years. So these plans are going back and taking out, their budgeting process has to be asking for now twice as much as they were 15 years ago as a percentage of payroll, and that payroll is likely growing too. So this causes some of the budgetary struggles you see in the states when they have to go back year after year and ask for more contributions. The bottom chart on page 5 is a funded ratio, again, for SDRS and the median plan. So here we're comparing, doing a ratio of the market value of assets or fair value to an actuarial liability for these plans. And the actuarial liability is really, the simplest way to explain that is if we were taking a level percent of pay that will accumulate to enough money to pay these benefits when somebody retires. The accrued liability is at any point where that employee is, this is how much money we should have set aside to pay for that benefit. So we do that for each person, we add them up, we say this is how much money we should have now to pay the benefits of the plan, knowing that the contributions are going to keep coming in year after year. SDRS, we're 100% funded, and those variable benefits in our process are designed to keep us there. We expect that we will be at 100% in most economic situations, and I'll come back to the limits on that, what we can withstand here and towards the end of my discussion here as well. You see, both our funded ratio and that of the median plans took a hit in 08 and 09 with the recession, and ours has recovered. And part of that are some of the changes we've made. Part of that is working with the Investment Council, who have, as Travis said, had some outstanding returns that really benefit the funding of the system. The other systems haven't recovered as much, in part by a couple of trends going on. One is systems are lowering their expected return, which is what is used to calculate those liabilities, to reflect the really consensus opinion that future investment returns will be lower than they have in the past. At the same time, that has been going on. And that median investment return has dropped from 8% a few years ago, and now is about 7.25%. We use 6.5%. We think that's a more realistic view. So even we're having a higher funded ratio, and we're using a more stringent measuring device against us. So our liabilities are higher than theirs relatively because of the lower discount rate. The other thing that's been going on in the last few years is systems have been recognizing the growing life expectancies and that members are living longer and adjusting their assumptions that way. And the combination of those two, and in some cases when the contributions haven't kept up with what's needed to fund the plan, have really dragged the median funded ratio down near 73%. And that's pretty close to the level that the contributions you have to put into the plan are the cost of the benefits, plus almost just as much to pay the debt service on your unfunded liability. Again, something that we avoid by staying 100% funded by managing the system with variable benefits. I do want to talk a minute about the experience for fiscal year 19, which is on page 7 in the middle of the page there. The investment return for the year was 4.84 or 4.88, depending on whether you use money-weighted or time-weighted. And that was a loss of about $200 million for the plan because we would expect on a long-term basis about 6.5%. So we look at the investment side, we look at the liability side, which is right below that box. We compare what we expected our liabilities to be to what they actually came in, and the difference was $6 million and 0.05%, and I'm hoping I'm not held to that standard every year because it's kind of a happy accident with gains on one hand and losses on the other, and they happen to cancel each other out almost exactly this year as well. But with that, the losses of roughly $200 million overall, because of our process, we were still able to afford a COLA equal to inflation this year, which is one of the board's goals, and we're really pleased with that result. We know there are going to be fluctuations in the market, and we would like to keep benefits up with inflation as we go as well. On page 11, there's about the middle of the page, there's a discussion of some actuarial method changes. I won't bore you with those details, but I want to talk about what caused those. We work with an external actuary each year. This is the I've been on staff almost 6 years now. This is the fifth valuation that I've done internally, which is a big process to take a snapshot, calculate the liabilities and the assets of the plan each year. Each year, the external actuary does a high-level review of our number of our report. Is this reasonable? Are the assumptions reasonable? Are the methods good? Do we meet the standards of practice? This being the fifth year, the board's process is to engage that external actuary to do a replication. So we ship all the data off to them. They start from scratch, program their software to do the same calculations we are. And the results were within 0.1% this year, which gives me and our board some comfort and hopefully gives some comfort to the committee here as well. The last several years, we've been harping on workforce issues, and pages 15 and 16 have a couple of exhibits I want to point you to just emphasize what we're continuing to see here. Page 15, we're charting here as of 2007 and 2019. The number, each bar is the number of members at that particular age. And the red bars, so the red portions of the bar, are those that have not yet retired, and the blue are those that have retired. The highlighted portion, the circled portion in the middle, are our baby boomers. And back in 2007, baby boomers were about 44% of our membership, and 11% of them had retired. Fast forward to June 30, 2019, the baby boomers are down to 38% of our membership as our population has continued to grow, but 56% of our baby boomers have retired. So we're more than halfway through this significant demographic trend that we're seeing as well. We're 100% funded, recognizing these increased number of retirements and the increased number of expectations. We're prepared for this. We've set aside money for this through the years. Page 16 tries to translate that into our retirements. And the blue bars are our historical numbers of retirement from active service. And you can see that 2019, fiscal 19, was a record year for the number of retirements. But if you look at the red bars, the projected retirements in the next few years, we expect to beat that and stay at that elevated level for the next 5 years or so. And the message we've been giving to all of our employers is that you're on an aggregate basis, all of our employers are going to need to replace 15 to 21% of their staff in the next 5 years. And in some particular offices, it might be a much higher number than that if it's a relatively long service office as well. We've got one more exhibit I want to direct you to, and that is on page 19. We go through this exercise every quarter with our board. And what we're looking at here is we're trying to establish what are the limits of the economic situations that we can withstand, economic conditions that we can withstand, and remain 100% funded. If we don't remain 100% funded, 312C228 says you've got to fix it. You've got to bring a legislative recommendation to fix that situation. So we work with the Investment Council, and on their benchmark asset allocation, they give us some investment portfolio statistics, and then we chart what's our expected return distribution. We overlay on top of that the SDRS funding requirements. And what you're looking at here in red, it says if our returns are less than -7% for fiscal 19, our funding can't maintain 100%, and we're bringing recommendations for corrections next year. That we see as a likelihood of happening, and this goes back to June 3019, as of that date, about 19% based on our statistics that we're looking at. On the green side, we like to look at the positive, that there's an 81% likelihood that it's business as usual, we're 100% funded, we've either got a restricted COLA or the full COLA range. Now, there's a couple things that make this out of date. Number one is Matt can go into detail if you need it, but we're not at our benchmark asset allocation. The Investment Council has made decisions to take some of that equity-like risk off the table right now. And when we look at this chart with their current asset allocation, that likelihood of having to make corrective actions goes down to 14% because they have taken some risk off the table through their asset allocation right now. And then we are also ignoring in this that the trust has earned some significant returns since June 30, and they're actually maybe a little bit, haven't reached our 6.5% goal, but are moving that direction and making progress towards maybe even maintaining the same COLA range or perhaps increasing it at the end of the fiscal year. We do go through this with our board every quarter on a one-year, two-year, three-year basis, give it a little longer look. As Travis said, we're trying to keep aware that if we're going to function on fixed contributions, there's going to be some conditions that come up and some situations where we have to make changes to maintain that. And we want to be prepared. We want to be making our decisions ahead of time rather than trying to make those decisions in a crisis. With that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm happy to answer any questions. I've breezed through this pretty quickly, so feel free.
Well, Doug, I tell you, we're on a time schedule. I'm just going to alert the committee members that you'll be around after our meeting. We have a 4 o'clock for a bill hearing, and so I know there's some questions, but if it's possible, we'd like to withhold them until after, and they'll catch you one-on-one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Yep. Next, we have a gentleman that has been known for success across the nation and is, I think, one of those individuals, if you visit with him for a while, you just scratch your head and wonder what type of philosophy can come about and bring this kind of return every year. And it's so good to have this opportunity to visit with Matt anytime. So this time we'll have Matt Clark.
Chair.
Yes.
We
have a personal privilege.
Mr. Clark is one of my constituents in my district. And so be very nice to him because he may vote for me the next time. Thank you.
That was Representative Zickman, in case he didn't know his name, Mr. Clark.
well, thank you.
Okay, Matt, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope that's not mine in my briefcase. I thought I shut him off. If I may, I know you're under time constraints. I handed out a copy of our transmittal letter from our recent annual report. And there's two pages there, and I'll just tell you a little bit about what's in there and in the interest of time, and then hit the last page if that's okay, and then it's up to you if you want to do questions. But again, Matt Clark, State Investment Officer. I work for the State Investment Council. In the transmittal letter, we talk about the fiscal year 19 performance. Honestly, we don't care about the short-term performance. 1 year is nothing in the scheme of what we're focused on. Only care about 10-year time frames and up. As Doug mentioned, we're tilting on the conservative side now because the markets are high. And so as the markets continue to go up, we'll underperform what we would do if we had kind of an average level of risk in our portfolio. I do talk about investing for the long term and that's our goal. And we approach that through looking at the present value future cash flows. So we compare price to what the cash flows in the future from an investment we think are worth. And when markets are cheap, we have extra. And when they're expensive, we sell down and raise cash, and we patiently wait for better opportunities. What probably is most unique about the council is its willingness to be patient and wait years for opportunities to come along. And then we recognize we're going to be early. We're not trying to be smart. We're just trying to have discipline. And so we're going to be early, and so we're prepared to suffer more than anybody else, you know, while we're early, and hang in there, and eventually it'll turn our way, and we'll end up ahead at the end of it all. That's what we've done in the past. You can see the long-term performance from that in the upper right-hand corner of that first page, and you can also see I only care about the 10-year and longer periods on there. And the same is true when the 1 year is good. To have a good 10 years, you have to have some good individual years in there as well. We tend to have some terrible ones and then some neutral ones, and then it turns our way and we have huge outperformances mixed in that makes the whole 10 years. That's the history. Talk about return expectations. Back in the 80s, markets were cheap. Interest rates were high. It was easy to make double-digit returns. Our process expected mid-teens returns back then, looking forward long-term. And in fact, over the subsequent 10 and 20 years, as you can see in the table, that's what happened. Well, unfortunately, that's not the case anymore. Stock markets are high. The expected return from stocks, if we're lucky, if the world holds together and these debt bubbles that have been, in my mind, contributing to so much of what we've seen in high markets, if that ever blows up, then our 7.5% long-term expected return from stocks will look way too optimistic. So I think that's kind of a, if things hold together, that's kind of our expected return. And if they don't, it would be a lot worse. On the bond side, you're only going to get a couple percent. And when you average, you know, maybe 7% out of stocks and 2% out of bonds, you know, you're going to you know, struggle to earn, you know, much over 6%, which was referenced earlier as the long-term expected return for SDRS. We do try to keep the cost very low. We manage most of the money internally to try to do that, but I think the real reason to manage money internally isn't to keep the cost low, but it's so that we can keep better tight control over our people to focus on the long term, because other firms, clients care about the short term. We don't care about the short term at all, and we want our people focused exclusively on those 10-year time frames and just not care at all how much pain we endure during the short-term intervening periods. And then I referenced the team effort. You can't do that long-term endure pain through the short-term periods investment approach if you don't have everybody involved on board with that. And the legislature and the governor's offices have historically have been wonderful supporters of thinking about the long-term and willing to be patient with us and endure that short-term pain. And so that's what makes it possible. But for that, you know, I don't know what we would do. And then the final page is a chart that I usually show in the Appropriations Committee meetings and the Executive Board meetings, so those there will recognize the chart. It's a return attribution exhibit that shows where has the added value come from. We have all these different investment teams in the office, and people say, well, why do you need so many? Why do you need to do all these different areas? Well, they're like pistons in an engine. Each one contributes something over the long haul, but they work at different times, and they help smooth out the ride. As volatile as our results are, they're even worse for any individual period, and it takes the collection of them all working in harmony to kind of dampen the volatility to more of a tolerable level. And you can see on there that we've added almost 10% since fiscal 99 to the total value of the fund from extra returns from our stock portfolios compared to if they'd just been in the stock indexes. The red is fixed income, especially high yield distressed debt. People say, why do we buy those bankrupt company bonds and things like that? Well, we've been able to add extra value in that area too. It's a small amount of investment for us, but it adds a lot relative to the amount invested. And then green is historically we've had hedge fund type things and merger arbitrage and convertible arbitrage. We're not doing them right now because we think those areas are overcrowded with other investors have ruined them. They were good when we were the only one doing them 20-some years ago, but now they've been ruined by overpopularity, and we'll go back in when others give up down the road. And then we have private equity and real estate. And then at the top in orange is asset allocation. That's, you know, the second largest piston, sometimes the largest piston. That is how we vary our amount of money invested in stock-like risk or bond-like risk or cash-like risk or real estate. So if stocks are high, like now, we'll move down our allocations below our normal levels. On average, we would have 70% in stocks and stock-like things like private equity and real estate. But when the markets are really high, we'll be down towards our minimum, which is we're at 50% right now. And when they're really cheap, we'll be at 85% our maximum. We were at the 85 level roughly after the financial crisis when markets were cheap. And we moved down to 50 just over a year ago. And then we got to move back up closer to 70 last Christmas time when the markets were cheap. And then they went back up and we moved back to 50. As of June, the Board of Directors, the Investment Council, made a decision to approve a plan to lower the minimum equity-like risk from 50 down to add two extra steps to go to 45 and 40 for when the markets are extremely expensive. If we get back into valuations like in 98, 99 in the internet bubble, and we're not quite there yet. So we could go to 40 now, but we're still at 50, which is our old minimum, because markets are very expensive, but not extreme yet, like they could still get if things unfold like in 99. So they could go up a whole lot more yet. In fact, we should hope they go up a bunch more so that we can sell even more at even higher prices and then hopefully we'll get a better buying opportunity after that. But that was my planned comments, Mr. Chairman. I know you're short on time.
We're fine. There's no question. Yes.
Could I ask a question to Director Clark? Just when you're changing that allocation, going from 70% to 50%, does the rest of that allocation, do you end up just parking that? Is that parked in cash or in bonds, or where does it go? Where does the rest of the allocation go?
Mr. Chairman, if we found bonds to be, generally speaking, once the equity-like risk is determined, and then whatever that is, then we allocate that between actual stocks and private equity and real estate and all the equity-like things. We divvy that up separately. But whatever isn't equity-like is either going to be bond-like or cash-like. And so if interest rates are attractive, it'll could all be in bonds, the extra. If interest rates are, you know, unattractive, like now, we think they're terrible. You know, they're really low, and it's lowest yields roughly in history, by and large. And so right now we're at our minimum in bonds, which is 15% in bond-like risk. We have a little bit more than that, I guess, maybe 17 or 18, because of the high yield contributes some through the back door. But basically the rest would be in cash. So we would be having about a third of our money in cash right now.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Senator. Matt, Travis, Jackie, Doug, we just can't thank you as a team enough for how you are handling our business. And with that, we really appreciate you taking time to hit the highlights on this joint committee. We're going to go into bill session now, but we wanted to take this time to give our members and the residents of the Capitol here an opportunity to hear how things are going within this, and we appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn from the House and a second. I have a motion by Mr. Perry and a second by Mr. Rounds. Right. But we have to do them. And at this time, I'd have a motion and a second on the Senate side.
So moved.
Mr. Smith, Senator Smith, and second, or you? You, Senator Nespa, made the motion, and a second by Ms., Senator Smith. Okay. All in favor of that motion or those motions, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. All right. At this time, the House members can stay or stay and listen, but at this point we'll probably go into session with the Senate.
Just a comment to the House members, they're going to be going through four bills, am I correct?
That's correct.
And so that's probably what we'll have coming over. We'll be scheduling hours fairly quickly once they get theirs done. So thank you, folks.